notes that you've given us today and the previous annual report, and I'm a little bit concerned about the gap between the information in the annual report and the report that was given today, in particular about the state of, you know, the entity. For instance, the Auditor General's report for the year ending on the 31st of March 2010 is very bad. There's inadequate control systems, there's non-adherence to the PFMA, there's all sorts of very bad things. In particular, the non-adherence to legislation around Section 51A of the PFMA with regard to the Chief Accounting Officer. I'll tell you what it says, so we all know. It says, an accounting authority for a public entity must ensure that the public entity has and maintains an effective, efficient, and transparent system of financial and risk management and internal control. And now the Auditor General says that this section of the Act wasn't complied to. So what I need to know is, are we going to get a very similar annual report again this year? And what mechanisms have you put in place? Because there's all sorts of problems here. I mean, the fruitless and wasteful expenditure of 7.6 million rands. You said that there's investigations, people have been prosecuted, etc., etc. But for instance, when it comes to accuracy of revenue contributions and valuation of assessment debtors, there's amounts in this report of 4.9 billion rands that you can't be accounted for, 4.8 billion rands. So my question is, for the money that you've spent so far this year, the 1.92 billion rands, can you account for that? Is there mechanisms in place for you to improve so that it doesn't look so dodgy? I mean, everything here looks a little bit dodgy. In the report from last year, the internal control mechanisms, it says here that the scope of resolutions passed as a result of the hearings held on the 18th of October 2006 relating to the 31st of March 2005 annual reports are still in progress. These resolutions have not been substantially implemented. I'd like to know if these resolutions have been implemented to date. I'd also like to see a copy of this turnaround strategy that you're referring to, because we don't have a copy of it. And when will this turnaround strategy? When will you have turned around? Is the question. The report goes on. Everything basically is very, very bad in this annual report from last year. And what I want to know is, have you put mechanisms in place to improve on this? Because if this comes back to us every time, it seems like a very bad thing, considering the amount of money that you actually are responsible for. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Must also thank the Commissioner for the presentation. First, I think it's a build-up to what my colleague have just said. You will recall that you were once called by SCOPA. And I think on the areas that he has just cited, and I think if in your response you can also indicate as to out of that meeting with SCOPA, what is it that you have done? I think that will be very much important, because I'm raising this chair because my colleague have just indicated that he is new, so I want a situation where in their response you take us from that meeting with SCOPA moving forward, in order those who were not part of the committee before they are able to know what was happening before. As the first point, I just wanted to raise that. The second point, Chair, is in relation to domestic workers who are not included by the legislation, and I think because they are workers too, as an entity in relation to the amendments that are talking about in the legislation that governs compensation, are you dealing with that? Because remember, even with UIF, many years ago they were not included, but then as time goes on, then the department, together with the entity itself, managed to bring them in those areas. Because we had UIF embarking on a campaign to concretize the taxi industry. My question is on domestic workers, and as we indicated that they are not included in terms of legislation. Are you doing something in order to deal with that? There's a number of issues that were raised. Especially the campaigns in order to prevent injuries, because you can't prevent compensating workers who have been injured unless the campaign is directed in preventing injuries themselves. You once indicated that there are awards that you want to put in place as the fund in an event where a particular employer has no injuries. How far are you with that? Does that form part of the four campaigns that you spoke about in the presentation? The third point for me is this 100 internships. But I think the aim is in the next 4 years is 100 per each year. Once one does appreciate that, but internship is not a permanent job. Yes, you are preparing people, you are skilling people, but what plans do you have after the internship comes to an end? Because obviously you can't just say, no, you have skilled this person, so therefore he or she must see to it. What plans do you have? The last 2 points, one is on the rehabilitation integration. I'm not hearing this for the first time, and I assume that you are not just raising it as you used to raise it before. Obviously there is work that has been done, because this will also impact in other labor legislations. Because you will recall that in the Labor Relations Act, there are dismissals based on incapacity. Then now, what you want to come up with, which for me is good, how do you see the entity working together with the department in trying to address that? Because that will mean there has to be amendments in other labor legislations, like your Employment Equity Act, because in the numerical goals of employers, they have to indicate as to how many people with disabilities that they intend to employ them in the process, not just in minor positions. I'm raising this chair because I don't want it just to be an issue that compensation fund is looking at without working with other parts of the department. So the last point, chair, is there are amendments in the act which are supposed to be processed to cabinet. obviously there's one person who will process them. It's the minister and the cluster itself before they go to the entire cabinet. They have to go to the cluster, they must be commenced and everything else. What's going to happen if the compensation fund continue to amend? I assume you are amending the Occupational Health and Safety Act, isn't it? That's my assumption, okay. Then if that is the piece of legislation that you are amending, yes, it's not your competency, but I think it's important. What's going to happen to the Mining Health and Safety Act? Is there any thinking that we need in the process just to have one legislation that deals with occupational health and injuries as a country? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
My colleague is skipping his turn again. Just in case I say something useful. Thank you for the presentation to the compensation fund. Things are obviously improving on a range of fronts, particularly with the due diligence. Clearly it's getting a lot better. On page 31 of the colour presentation, you've got a table there, a summary of financial performance. And that summary worries me a little bit, because if you look at the number of claims, and I assume that's the number of claims, or it could be the rand value of claims, I don't know. We've got 1.6 million in 09-10, and then we've got 1.9 million in 2010-2011, which is a, you know, it's an increase of about 300,000. So 300 million, I beg your pardon. And that must be rand then, because that wouldn't be too many claims. So all right, 300 million rand increase. When you look at the compensation of employees, it goes from 108 million to 114 million. That's not a very big increase. That's not even keeping up with inflation. Does that mean we're paying less people, or we're paying less money? I mean, these people are suffering, and we are paying them less than the year before, if you take inflation into account. That doesn't look good at all. That looks like we're not paying compensation out. It's sort of plateaued, and we don't pay any more compensation out. I don't like that at all. Please can we explain why the increase is so poor? That's pathetic. The claims increases seems all right. Administrative expenses, wow. So we increase the compensation by like 1 or 2%, but the administrative expenses go up by a whopping amount, from 190 million to 279 million. So you see, this is the problem we get all over government at the moment. The administrative expenses go up and up and up through the roof, but the service delivery doesn't. Why? I would like to see the compensation going up and up and up, provided it's valid compensation, obviously, for valid claims, and the administrative expenses, you know, start to plateau. And we've got it the other way around. That looks very, very bad. And then secondly, if I can just talk about trends of claims. I noticed that the claims that are not finalized almost always, Chairperson, have the same problem, and that is a missing document. The ones that come across my desk, as the Commissioner knows, I refer to him constantly. I gave him a bit of a break over December and January, but they are coming again long and fast. But there's a common trend that I notice, and that is that it gets stuck with a missing document, the ones that are not finalized. And usually it's the case of the claimant who says, I've sent you the doctor's report, and the compensation fund comes and says, no, but we need this other page. It's usually a piece of paper that's missing, and it's usually got to do with the doctor's report. Sometimes that's because the claimant doesn't understand that the report they've got is not the right report. They've got a report from a doctor over here, and they need a report from a specialist over there. So sometimes that's the problem, is that they think they've given in the report, but they haven't, because they've given in the wrong report or not enough paperwork. There's pages missing. Alternatively, they come to me and they say, I've given in the report at the office in Athlone or the office in wherever, but it hasn't got to head office. It's got missing somewhere in the system. And then they get very angry, and then I tell them they must go back to their doctor and get another one, and then they're very angry with government because we've lost all their documentation. I notice once the compensation fund has got all the documentation, generally it happens quite quickly. It gets resolved, it's paid or it's not paid, or they get a letter saying that they're not going to get the money because they don't qualify or something. That part of it happens quite quickly. But I notice that the sticking point is often reports that are missing. Either they've got the wrong report that they've handed in and they think that they've complied when they haven't complied, or they've handed in the report and it's gone missing. And I wonder if the Commissioner could tell us if there's something that can be done urgently to deal with those doctors' reports and medical reports, because I think that's where the bulk of the problems now occur. The payments happen once. We used to have a problem also with payments, but I think that that's largely solved. The current sticking point is around these documents that just don't get to the right place. Those are my two questions. Thank you.
Your investment income runs at 2.2 billion, and I am getting a bit worried that you might be getting tempted to invest in order to generate income and thereby delay the payment to claimants. I'm just worried about that. I suspect that perhaps it is one of the reasons that caused the delay of payments to claimants.
Thank you, Honorable Buinamo. You want to, Commissioner?
Thank you, Chair. I think what I'll do, I'll deal with other questions and then I'll refer the SCOPA question and the mechanism that are being put in place to deal with those issues that the General has raised. But basically, in general, as I think I've tried to allude to you, what type of institutions we have. If you go and look around in any medical industry or any, all systems are automated and paper is less in use. Unfortunately, in a compensation fund, it's the opposite. The business processes work around paper. And I think that's one of the critical revolution that needs to happen there. Is the automation. And which also talks to the question you raised about missing documents. It's not workers who are supposed to send the documents that tend to miss all the time. It's doctors. But doctors are frustrated because in the normal world where they operate, they submit this information technologically. They go switching agencies that works with them to switch invoices, switch accounts, and switch reports. And then they get into the different administrators, and things get processed faster because the information gets there and doesn't get lost if it came electronically. It sits in the system. Unfortunately, in the compensation fund, it's paper. It's some, just to give an example, Netcare across the country will print all invoices line by line for each and every medical service they've provided, whether it's a supply of a tablet, supply of an injection, or supply of a bandage. All that details is printed on paper, shipped to the compensation fund in a truck, and then a box will be thrown out to registry. and then it has to be taken out of that, distributed to the different sections to be recaptured into the system. That is the current state of affairs in the compensation fund. Hence, the issue that Smoba has raised is around internal controls and inadequacy thereof, is record management. Our record management system is still manual, and we have not yet mastered. They've introduced the scanning system, I think about 5 years ago, and that is not working. It's not working, and Siemens has failed in assisting us to get the scanning environment up to scratch. And I think we've raised this issue several times, to the extent that last year in August, I opted to curtail the relationship with Siemens and contacted that directly with the owner of the software to try to address this issue. It's slow, but we are getting there. We have also put some manual processes to try to address the Auditor General's request. For example, after they've captured all that information in the system manually, we pack it back in boxes, and we have to write the date that this information was captured on this date. And then we pack it again in boxes so that we can be able to account for it. Currently, that's what we're trying to do to meet the requirements. Under normal circumstances, we're not supposed to receive that. It's supposed to come electronically to us and right into the system, so there's no paper. One of the other issues that we're also trying to put in place as a temporary measure whilst waiting for the solution was the bulk uploading, where we are piloting now that to say, give us those boxes, give us in a CD, we'll load that information into the system, and then we'll process it once it's loaded. So we're piloting that project, and we believe that if it's flying, which I'm hopeful it will fly. The challenge that I need to deal with is change management. Because in an environment of too much paper, there's a lot of overtime there. And now when you bring this bulk uploading solution, what it does, it creates an impression that overtime has disappeared, we won't have it. And the buying into that will be very slow, because people have, over the years, taken their normal salary plus overtime as part of the income. So that culture change has to happen, and it has to take its own turn. So I think that's the challenge that I'm working on, because I'm monitoring the statistics of this thing, and I'm not happy with the performance, because I can see the reason that it's a culture issue here. We may need to push hard on that one so that we can do away with paper. But paper still remains our problem. And for as long as we still work with it, we'll always have the Auditor General's questions. And Honorable Member, I must say that you may find that they will raise these issues, because he gives you 5 days to give him the information. He takes a sample of all your claims, then he pulls out and says, give me 36 or 600 of this. If you can't give him within 5 days, the Auditor General says, you're limited my scope. I'm limited in my scope. That amount of claims, the whole amount, 2 or 4 billion that you have collected from employers or you have paid out, I cannot express an opinion on it, because you were not able to give me relevant information in time. So that's the challenge which we have. So we're doing our best to try to meet the 5-day requirement of the AG. And that is the environment that I'm adjusting it to bring. The reason why we're going for a rent mutual solution, it's 100% compliant with our legislation. Secondly, it is electronic throughout. It's linked to all the switching houses in the country, which means doctors and hospital will be able to submit information electronically for us to be able to process. Unfortunately, we have to go back to Siemens and start developing the system using their own stuff that are used to doing things manually on paper. So you can imagine the intelligence I'm going to put onto the system is a manual logic. So that is the risks that I'm sitting with. But I'm not an accounting officer. We have accepted the decision of the accounting officer, and we're doing our best to implement with the knowledge and the resource that we got. Under normal circumstances, we're supposed to get enterprise solutions, not to reinvent the wheel. I think that's what we're sitting with now with the Siemens solution. It's us giving them the requirements and them automating those things. So that might be the challenge. That's why I've asked the auditors to go in and look as to whether what I'm getting, will it have an impact from a service delivery point of view. So that's one other thing that we are looking at with the auditors to say, yes, the system is ready, but what impact will it have? Because the people who have designed it are the same people who have been working for years with paper. So that's the challenge that I'm sitting with. On the issue of irregular expenditure, I must indicate here that when I took over the fund in 2007, there was a service provider called Access One. Access One was providing, literally, they were capturing information on behalf of the fund, and they were also running the financial software solution. And the contract had expired when I took over. Siemens took over the software part of the business because they were responsible for managing the software solution. However, the management of the system to run reports, capture information, still remained with Access One. And the capacity of the financial staff there was almost zero. Hence, the provider was allowed to do that. On trying to renew the contract, I discovered that the company has changed names over years. It's not in compliance with South African Revenue Services. They're not paying tax to the tune of over, I think, over 10 million, which they're owing to SARS. And I then consulted with the National Treasury to say, I'm sitting with a problem here. I've inherited these people, and I'm having this contract. I'm unable to sign it because it will be a qualification for me to sign it. We've gone through the process, and then finally, the AG says, you need to do something to address this issue. So we have signed, despite those limitations. We've made them to make written commitments that they are in touch with SARS and don't do their things for us to comply. However, the monies we have paid them during that space is irregular because there was no legal contract. I think that irregular and wasteful is in that context, that you had somebody doing work for you, but you did not have a contract because the old contract expired and you didn't renew it. So I think that's a challenge. Finally, early this year, we received a decision from National Treasury that we are not going to condone it. So it will sit there because we've tried to get condonation. But at the moment, we're not receiving any condonation for it. The other issues the CFO will deal with. On the SCOPA issue and post-SCOPA, she will deal with those things. Domestic workers, I think it's something that we need to look into because constitutionally we can't defend it. We can't defend the exclusion constitutionally, but we need to look into it. I think the challenge we may have with domestic workers is the issue of industry class. What industry class, because the commission fund is premised on risk based on industry. So we may need to create a special industry for domestic workers, but that's something that I'd have to give to actuaries to look at and advice. Those are some of the challenges I'm looking at. With regard to campaigns, Mr. Mkalipi is very close to this one. It's called his Civil Society Fund. We work with Mkalipi there to identify service providers or institutions like universities and all those things that works with unions to train shop stewards and to create awareness amongst workers. So those projects come through Mkalipi's function, and then we look at them, and if we believe they are promoting prevention, we fund them. I will not want to waste your time on the internship issue. Definitely, we don't have a plan. It is something that now that you have asked. I think our eagerness was to respond to the president's call to create jobs. But I think the issue is, what next? I think, are they sustainable or not sustainable? So maybe it's the issue that we need to go back into drawing board to say, beyond this internship, what else? Maybe we may need to move closer to the UI to say, in the, what we are doing, what assistance can you give us for these people to get employed? With regard to the rehabilitation and reintegration, indeed, there will be impact on other legislations, and that I must also report that there is indeed progress. Yesterday, the fund internally, we were finalizing the final report, which is going to be presented at the next top management of the Department of Labor for approval, so that we can give it to the minister to look at it and then get guidance to go outside and consult further. So there is movement, serious movement in that area. And the board is fully involved because we believe not only other legislation, employers will have to come big way. So we need to also get employers on board. I think other amendments, I'm not so sure with regards to the Mine Health and Safety Act. But according to the document that we're sitting with, the Mine Health and Safety Act might have to be integrated into our legislation because Rand Mutual is doing the benefit administration. So the issue there that we may be worried about is the ODIMWA part. The health side of it, well, for lung diseases, because that one is managed by the Department of Health. So for us to make sure that they come to the party, it's either we may have to reintegrate it back into RMA, or we may have to take it over. So those are some of the discussions that we may need to look into. Otherwise, they will fall off if we don't discuss. With regard to Honorable Ollis, CFO, you will try to explain the difference in those numbers. Administrative expenses, why are they higher than the inflation on compensation of employees, and also the claims? I think I've dealt with the issue of missing documents. I also want to assure honorable members that when it comes to investments, in the fund with an investment committee, which is a subcommittee of the board, that's their duty to look at the performance and monitor of PIC. But PIC does all the investment work on our behalf. We don't do it ourselves. At that point, it's only the subcommittee of the board that monitors whether they do what they're supposed to do. So we're not managing investments at the expense of claims. So CFO, if you can come.
Thank you, Chair and honorable members. If I may demonstrate to you how we have tried to clear some of the qualifications, if you look at the year before 2005 to 2007, we had a qualification on revenue and contribution and debtors. 2008, it was disclaimers in all the areas, that is revenue contributions, bank reconciliations, claims incurred, and IFRS 7. 2009 was worse. It was disclaimers right through. But if you go to 2010, that's where you then see a great improvement there. The issue of the revenue and contribution assessment debtors, we managed to move from a disclaimer to a qualification. Our main challenge there, or the finding by the AG, is the issue around the accuracy and completeness around the issue of the revenue and the debt book that we're currently having. There are steps that we have taken. For instance, if I may make an example, on a yearly basis, we sent out the ROEs to the employers to complete and send them back to us so that we can assess them, then they pay on the ROEs that have been charged. But we've got instances where we send employers the ROEs, they never returned, so in that way we never even raise the revenue. And that, I think that's where the HE has a problem. But as one of the interventions that we've done, we've started in fact this year, we are estimating based on the previous year's ROEs that were submitted. The Act allows us, and in that way we are in a position to raise assessment, thereby forcing employers and then handing over to the debt collector. One of the other strides that we've done in terms of addressing the issue of the assessment debtors, as the Commissioner has indicated that we've appointed a debt collector, and in one of the presentations we could demonstrate how much has been collected by the debt collector. So in that way, we're thinking that somehow we are addressing the qualification. But if you look at that qualification, it's very much inherent in our business. But there are controls that we are trying to put in place and also improving on the system. The second qualification was on the bank reconciliation, which we managed to clear in the year-end 2010. Claims incurred, the other finding by AG is the accuracy and completeness of claims. I think that qualification is what the Commissioner was trying to explain, to say if you can't provide AG with the source document, then you are limiting their scope. And as part of the interventions that we've done, is to ensure that we improve in terms of document management. If you see the increase on our slide where we talk about the administrative expenses, we've also bought additional licenses to improve on the COFEX system, that is the system that we use to scan the documents. Accounts payable, the qualification there or the disclaimer was around the issue of reconciling and not paying the accounts in time. We've managed to reconcile and satisfy AG, and that qualification or disclaimer was cleared. Property, plant and equipment, this talks to your fixed asset register, reconciling to your financial records. We've got a fully-fledged fixed asset register, which is maintained on a monthly basis and agrees to the financial statements. The last qualification was on the issue of the IFRS 7. That qualification was mainly on how we disclose the investments. We have since cleared that qualification, and we have satisfied AG in terms of how we report in terms of our investments. That is, in the nutshell, the progress that we have achieved in terms of trying to address the audit issues. Then, coming back to the other question by... slide 31, in terms of the financial performance. The slight increase in terms of the compensation of employees. This relates to the salaries that we pay to the employees. Included in the figure is the payment of the performance awards and as well the overtime. What we have done to also improve in terms of our efficiencies, we have introduced norms and standards where staff members are performance managed on a quarterly basis. And in that way, as we improve the norms and standards, a few people qualify for merit awards. So in that way, you'd see the slight decrease in terms of the merit awards that were paid this financial year. As well as another control that we've put in place is the issue of the overtime, where we are managing that area. By improving the norms and standards, it reduces your element of people having to work unnecessary overtime. So on a daily basis, there are norms and standards that are being supervised or are being monitored by the supervisors. But in terms of the normal ATB, that is your 7% that was agreed on by public service, the employees got the 7.5%. Okay. Thank you, Chair. Sorry, Chair, I missed that question. I think the question was around how do we encourage employers who comply and have less accidents. On an annual basis, we do revise the assessment rate based on the, we actually look at the accidents that occurred in the business and then we adjust the subclass rate, thereby improving compliance. And actually what it means, employers that improve their safety, they get a rebate in terms of the assessment. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Just before you come in, we an hour late. Or rather, we're running behind about an hour because we're still to take NADLAC. I was just raising that so that we take that into consideration. I don't know if it's still a follow-up question, and I think Honorable Oli seems to be the only one who wants to make a follow-up question or comment. Let's take that briefly and then...
I'll be quick. It's a simple one.
Yeah.
My question isn't answered. Compensation of, in that last slide you just showed us, the compensation the administrative expenses.
Yeah, the question about
the administrative went from 190 to 280 it's a huge increase in administrative costs, and I wanted to know why that is, because it's way over what it should be.
Thank you, Chair. What we've done this year, part of the increase is due to the expensing of assets that are less than 5,000. In the previous year, we used to expense assets that are less than 1,000. So that also increased the administrative expenses, because now you're increasing the cap in terms of what you expense in terms of the assets. Another contributing factor to this is our administrative costs. I think Commissioner has indicated that we have started decentralizing to some of the provinces. Because the structure, we don't have a fully approved structure that takes into account the decentralization. We have seconded staff members to the provinces where they are doing quite a work. We pay for their accommodation and subsistence, so it forms part of the expense. Another contributing factor which I spoke to was the issue of improving on our COFEX. We've bought additional licenses, and there's also we've also improved in terms of our data lines. We've increased our data lines. We've also, as the Commissioner indicated, in terms of trying to fight fraud, we've also co-sourced the services of forensic experts who are assisting our risk unit in terms of investigating those cases. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much for the presentations and also for the responses to the questions. We may not always get the answers that we expect from the questions which were asked. But thank you very much, and you also are welcome to sit over and listen to the presentation from NADLAC. Mr. Mkhize from the Chief Executive of NADLAC. Are you already connected? Oh, okay. I think in the meantime, just grab a cup of tea, coffee, water, the list goes on. Yeah, unfortunately for NADLAC, it includes on the third floor in Mr. Honorable Ollis's office, gin and tonic.
But when you come to our office for dinner, Tony, you can take it off the table.